This episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co. Based in Genoa, at the heart of the Mediterranean, Amico & Co. is a family-owned refit yard with more than two centuries of maritime heritage behind it. Today, the yard is widely recognised for its work on large yachts, offering a full-service refit capability delivered largely through its own in-house teams, from paint and engineering to complex conversions and structural projects. Rooted in one of Europe's great historic port cities, Amico combines tradition, technical depth, and long-term thinking, making it a trusted partner for owners, captains, and shipyards alike. Hello, and welcome to Boat Briefing. I'm Holly Majerison, the online editor at Boat International, and this week we're focusing on business updates in the world of yachting. It's been an unusually intense stretch of news. Geopolitics, ownership shakeups, boardroom changes, and takeover activity. So I'm joined by our business editor, Gabrielle Lazaridis. We'll then shift our focus to the history of the St. Bart's Bucket, which is fast approaching and taking place from the 12th to the 15th of March. So Gabby, it feels like every morning there's another major headline at the minute.
It really has been that kind of week, hasn't it? It's been a lot of late nights, but hopefully good content for our readers.
Yeah. So let's start with the most serious development, the escalating conflict involving Iran and Israel and the broader regional implications. So I know that you've been speaking to maritime security advisors and insurers. What does this mean for yachts right now?
So based on what they've been saying, the key message is caution, obviously. We're seeing heightened risk across the Gulf region, particularly around the Strait of Hormuz. While there's been no formal closure, traffic through the strait is reportedly down around 90% compared to normal levels, and that's just in the first couple of days. There's been missile and drone activity, electronic interference, and at least two tankers have been struck. I think another one was struck last night. For yachts, the main risk isn't that they're deliberate targets, it's proximity risk. So falling debris, misidentification, or simply just being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So even if a yacht isn't politically linked, it's still exposed by geography?
Yeah. Industry bodies are warning that vessels without direct US or Israeli affiliations have been hit before. So the advice is enhanced security protocols, daylight transits if movement is unavoidable, manual navigation cross-checks due to GPS interference, and in many cases, just delaying passage altogether.
And we're also talking about operational disruption beyond direct strikes.
Yeah, that's an important point, actually. So there have been airspace closures across parts of the UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Oman, and that's having quite an effect on crew changes and logistics. So ports like
Gabby is actually Googling how to
you
say
didn't
this.
Pause
port.
The recording.
No. I think we're keeping going.
Okay. Ports like Doom and Salalah have reportedly been struck. Even if yachts aren't moving, provisioning and staffing is becoming rather complicated quickly.
Yeah, and insurance has reacted fast as well.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn some of these numbers, but our friends over at Roppner Insurance told us that war risk premiums in listed areas, so that's JWC listed areas, have doubled within days. In some cases, insurers have issued a 10-day cancellation notice on existing war cover, which is just procedural. So those people will then have to reinstate cover under revised higher terms. The duration of the inflated rates depends, again, entirely on how long the volatility continues. Historically, like we saw a couple years ago with instances in the Red Sea, rates ease after prolonged periods without incidents, but that does take time.
Absolutely. And then what about Dubai International Boat Show? Because that's coming up in April, I believe.
We haven't actually heard anything from organizers as of yet. A similar episode back in 2003 happened, and the organizers basically said that they weren't planning to cancel any of the exhibitions. So we're going to have to wait to see what happens there. But Dubai Harbor, for the moment, remains operational. There is just a question of whether or not this is going to become more of a local showcase, because yacht movements through Hormuz right now are the real question. If no yachts can get there, then,
true.
If yachts can't get through the Strait of Hormuz, then obviously they can't attend the show. So security advisors are clear. The situation is fluid and needs constant reassessment. So attendance, especially international attendance, is going to depend heavily on how the next couple of weeks unfold.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess the takeaway is there's no blanket shutdown, but elevated risk, higher insurance, logistical disruption, and I suppose cautious decision making.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair summary.
Okay, and let's move to another business story. Let's move to the UK. So some big news this week. Sunseeker has confirmed new ownership. Again,
yeah. So a consortium led by KCP Holdings is acquiring the business alongside Lionheart Capital. The deal is expected to complete pending regulatory approval, and the yard says it's operating as normal during that process.
And leadership changes too.
Andre Rubio is now CEO, so his background is more in financial and operational transformation rather than traditional yacht building, which suggests that the company is heading towards a restructuring phase and will need his expertise for that. Mm-hmm. Anthony Sheriff, formerly executive chairman at Princess, and I didn't know this, but previously CEO of McLaren Automotive, for any of the F1 fans out there.
Oh, interesting.
He's now the non-executive chairman.
And what is the stated strategy then?
Investment in new product tends to be the front line. Reintroducing a superyacht offering and changes to the operating model. We started to see the beginnings of their strategy, what with the sale of the first 41-meter 134 yacht model.
That's a mouthful.
It was supposed to be the first from their new superyacht range, but we obviously don't know if they'll be continuing with what they had planned or if they'll be pivoting from here.
So for the market, I guess this signals commitment rather than contraction.
Yeah, I'd say so. Ultimately, the messaging is focused on long-term backing and structured growth.
Okay, interesting. And so staying in Europe, the Italian C Group has also had a significant board change.
You're just on it with these segues today.
What can I say?
But yes, that's correct. So founder and CEO Giovanni Constantino has now been elected chairman following resignation of both the previous chairman and vice chairman.
And this comes during a turbulent period.
It does. The company announced legal action related to the Perini Navi yacht Baysian, but then also this week, the group announced it had opened an investigation into, and I quote, significant extra budget costs.
Okay. And for those of us, like myself, not so familiar with business jargon, what does that actually mean?
So basically, the yard's been overspending against the approved budgets for its projects. The company stated this was happening without the knowledge of its CEO, board of directors, or supervisory bodies, but that an initial investigation found certain senior executives were involved. An outside investigation is now underway to find out who else was responsible, how they were able to circumvent company safeguards specifically designed to protect against this happening, and how much the company has overspent over the years.
Wow. Okay. So lots to follow along for then.
Yeah, I expect to be kept plenty busy.
I'm sure you will. Okay. So on to my next segue. Now to the US and Marine Max, because this feels like it's a constantly developing story, almost daily.
It is. So activist investor Dunrail has offered $35 per share in cash to acquire the company. That was about a 19% premium to its share price at the time. Marine Max says it's engaging with the proposal and has provided an NDA to facilitate due diligence between the two companies. Mm-hmm. The latest development, though, comes from Reuters, which is reporting how Marine Max is entertaining the prospect of new offers from interested third parties, including really well-known names like Blackstone and Centerbridge, although those reports remain unconfirmed publicly.
Interesting. And there's been some back and forth via open letters.
Yeah, Dunrail, this has really been turning into this kind of protracted saga. So Dunrail has criticized the board for what it sees as insufficient engagement regarding the offer and also poor industry performance. Marine Max maintains it is evaluating the offer responsibly, and it unanimously supports its CEO, Brett McGill, who Dunrail would like to see step away from his role. But it's worth remembering Marine Max is quite the major player. It's got over 120 locations globally with interests spanning dealerships, marinas, superyacht brokerage, financing, and digital platforms. So this isn't just a small acquisition. And I would say it's expected to take some time.
You would imagine so. So I guess this is about valuation, governance, and strategic direction.
Exactly, yeah. And whether shareholders believe greater value lies in remaining public under its current leadership or accepting takeover of all of its outstanding shares.
very succinctly put. So to recap, that's a lot of business
news. That's the best
news.
That's the best way to approach business news, I think. It's just keep it to the headlines.
I think so too. So I guess to recap, you know, it's geopolitical volatility affecting operations and insurance. Then we've got the major British builder Sunseeker changing hands again. Lots of ongoing investigations at the Italian Sea Group, and then takeover pressure building in the US for Marine Max.
But pretty good, pretty well succinct by yourself as well.
Why, thank you. Okay, so before we wrap up, I actually thought it might be nice to talk about something a little more celebratory. And that's the history.
Celebratory?
What did I say?
Celebratory.
Let's hope the podcast editors get that one out. So it's actually one of those fixtures in the sailing calendar that everyone knows, but actually not everyone knows how it actually began. And it's hard to believe how informal its origins actually were.
Oh, completely. When you look at the scale of the event today, the J-class fleet, the sponsors, the global attention, it's quite renowned. It's quite extraordinary to remember that the bucket really started as a rum-fueled birthday idea. So like any great idea is born.
I think that's where the best ideas start. Mm. So yes, 1986, Nantucket. It was the eve of owner Nelson Doubleday's birthday.
What a name.
His captain, John Clyde Smith, and a couple of other superyacht captains devised a 15 nautical mile course around Nantucket Sound after what was described as a torrid rum squall.
I don't know what that means.
Do you know what that means?
Should I look that up on chat? What does that mean?
Yeah, what does torrid rum squall mean?
Torrid rum squall meaning. The name of a thoroughbred racehorse? No, that doesn't sound right. Torrid means intensely hot, burning, or passionate. Squall, a sudden violent gust of wind or localized storm. So a intensely hot, burning, or passionate violent gust of wind or localized storm.
Okay, interesting.
There you have it, everybody.
There we have it. You learn something new every day. Well, anyway, 7 yachts showed up. That was it. There was no commercial machine, and there was certainly no formal rule book.
And the principles were very clear from the beginning. It was meant to be informal, social, and fun. So winning wasn't necessarily the point. In fact, one of the most coveted trophies later on was the Escargot Cup, awarded to the boat that finished last.
Which tells you actually everything you need to know about the spirit of it. So the Caribbean edition actually began in 1995 in...
Oh, good luck with this.
Oh, dear. St. Eustatius?
I'm going to say you nailed it.
Thank you. With 5 boats, Mount Gay Rum and Goat Stew the night before. Sorry. What is going on right now?
Do you know St. Lucia's national dish used to be goat stew, goat water? And I was really intrigued to try it when I was just there.
Didn't you? You mentioned this on the last podcast episode, I think.
But then I found out that they had recently changed their national dish to saltfish stew. So I went for that instead.
And how did that compare?
Do you know what it was? I didn't try the goat water. Okay. I was interested too. But
interesting. You'll have to go to the St. Bart's. Yeah, you'll have to go to the St. Bart's bucket. So yeah, 5 boats, Mount Gay Rum and Goat Stew the night before. And then the fleet motor sailed over to St. Bart's. So they realized immediately that St. Bart's offered better racing conditions. And that's where it stuck.
And some of the early formats were inventive, to say the least.
That's putting it politely. There was a brief attempt at a Le Mans-style start, where the crew member drinks a daiquiri on the beach, takes a high-speed tender back to the yacht, sails off anchor with no engines, then sails back onto anchor at the finish. Unsurprisingly, that only happened once.
Now, I wonder why that is. But what's fascinating is how the handicap system evolved. So in the early days, it was very tongue-in-cheek. Ratings could change race to race, and champagne might be gifted to the handicappers as a sort of humorous offering. Do you know what this reminded me of? Back in my swimmer days, because I was a competitive swimmer for a time.
Oh, yeah.
There was one annual meet where if you got DQ'd, so disqualified from a race for whatever reason, you're dealing with kids that are 5 to 10 years old. If you got DQ'd, they would come around and give you a voucher for DQ, which is Dairy Queen in Canada. So you had a bunch of kids that are trying to get DQ'd because they want the voucher for a free ice cream.
Oh my God, that would have been me. I wouldn't have even had to try to be disqualified though, I don't think. No, I was always that kid that was, you know, picked last on the bench. That kind
I have a very difficult time believing that, Holly.
No, it's true, unfortunately. So yeah, maybe this is my kind of race where, you know, the ultimate winner is actually...
You go for that. I will go for the Escargot trophy.
Perfect. Okay, deal. So I think there was even an understanding that no yacht should win or lose more than once. So if you won, your rating was adjusted. If you picked up the Escargot Cup, your rating was adjusted. It was engineered for participation, not dominance.
Which is very different from where it eventually went, of course. By the mid-2000s, the fleet had doubled, then grown to nearly 30 yachts. It was a much more scientific, methodical.
Yeah.
A more methodical bucket rule emerged. And with larger, more competitive boats entering, things inevitably became more serious.
Yeah. And protests increased, invitations became coveted and occasionally controversial. There's even a story of an owner traveling halfway around the world to ask why he hadn't been invited back.
And yet, the organizers have always tried to protect that Corinthian spirit. So separate J-class divisions, non-spinnaker classes, way to keep it competitive, but not cutthroat.
Yeah. And of course, the social side is legendary. So the yacht hop, where guests bounce from yacht to yacht for themed parties. Nikki Beach crew nights, Jimmy Buffett turning up to helm 52-meter meteor. Do you know why that just felt like such a clunky sentence? Buffett turning up to helm
52-meter meteor. Just rolls off the tongue and meteor really trips you up.
Yeah, I'm getting really tripped up today. And then, you know, crews in cheerleading outfits, custom bucket love uniforms. It's part regatta, part theatre, really.
But that just makes it so much more enjoyable. But there's also a serious economic and charitable contribution as well. It's the island's second busiest week after New Year's. Builders like Vitters, Royal Houseman, Pendennis, Perini Navi, Baltic, and Nodderswan are regular supporters. And it's kind of become a place to quietly network, but also reinforce the sailing superyacht community. And importantly, part of each entry fee has gone back into local projects on St. Bart's.
That's great. And it feels quite fitting. So for all the rum, racing and irreverence, there's a real sense of giving back to the island that hosts it. And maybe that's why it's endured for three decades. It's evolved. You know, there's more structure, more scale. But ultimately, I think it's still anchored in that original idea. Big sailing yachts, good racing, and not taking yourself too seriously.
I mean, in this industry, that's increasingly rare and, you know, really refreshing sometimes.
Absolutely. So actually, we're currently writing the article, as we speak, actually, about the entrance for the St. Bart's Bucket this year. So that will be going online today, and I will drop that in the notes below. As well as all of the articles, the business articles that we have discussed today, and also our big feature on the history of the St. Bart's Bucket. So our listeners can enjoy reading those also.
You mean there's more to the history of the St. Bart's Bucket than what we covered?
Well, there might not be more, but I think that they can decide how to say the words that we were not so sure about and probably not butcher the pronunciation in the same way that we have.
Fair.
And that is refreshing.
We're doing our best, okay?
We're doing our best. So that's it for this week. As always, we will be continuing to update developments as they unfold. And Gabby will be keeping her finger on the pulse of everything in the business world.
You bet.
Lots of late nights ahead, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to Boat Briefing. Gabby, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time. And that's it for this week's episode of Boat Briefing, which was a production of Boat International Media and sponsored by Amico & Co. As always, you can find all of the stories we discussed today on boatinternational.com and in the notes below. I must also apologise for the mispronunciation of the many names, places and daiquiris, not daiquiri, as I said, between Gabby and I. We do try our best, but as you can tell, it doesn't always work. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Boat Briefing.